of the Kafkaesque saga continues in our collective nightmare. Here we are again, sifting through the latest batch of emails that tie President Donald Trump to Jeffrey Epstein, because apparently the universe just can't get enough of this grotesque soap opera, as if we didn't have enough to worry about with the government grinding to a halt like an old jalopy running out of gas. Now we're back to dissecting Trump's relationship with a man whose name has become synonymous with sordid scandal. The House Oversight Committee Democrats have decided to grace us with three emails from Epstein's estate that mention Trump. Not exactly Christmas morning excitement, is it? One email from 2011 charmingly refers to Trump as the dog that hasn't barked, whatever cryptic nonsense that means. Another email from 2019 suggests Trump might have asked Ghislaine Maxwell, a woman whose moral compass seems perpetually broken, to stop recruiting employees from Mar-a-Lago, because nothing says I care quite like telling someone not to hire people for God knows what shady purposes on your own turf. Republicans have chimed in, claiming one redacted victim mentioned is Virginia Giuffre, who tragically took her own life last April, and who never implicated Trump in any wrongdoing. But hey, why let facts get in the way of a good narrative? The White House insists these emails prove absolutely nothing except Trump's innocence. Sure. And I've got a bridge in Brooklyn I'd love to sell you. These revelations, or lack thereof, do little more than reignite questions about what Trump knew and when he knew it regarding Epstein's unsavory proclivities. It's almost like we're stuck on repeat. Trump distanced himself from Epstein because he was a creep, yet somehow no one's ever bothered to elaborate on what precisely made him reach this Sherlockian conclusion. And then there's Maxwell, dear sweet Maxwell, whose credibility is as stable as a Jenga tower during an earthquake. Her testimony downplays Trump's connection with Epstein while simultaneously being contradicted by these new emails suggesting otherwise. But here's the kicker. Despite all this chaos swirling around him, Trump's still feeding perceptions of a cover-up with every move he makes or doesn't make in response to these documents' release. His reaction, pressure Republicans against falling into some imagined trap related to Epstein or anything else remotely inconvenient. So what's left for us? We sit back and watch this circus unfold yet again. A spectacle where truth is elusive, and accountability is but a distant dream lost amidst political gamesmanship and endless deflection tactics. Welcome back, America. It's another day in our collective nightmare where absurdity reigns supreme, and reality feels stranger than fiction could ever hope to be.
The Devil Wears Prada 2 inches teaser has dropped, and it's just what the world needed. Because nothing screams urgency like a sequel to a movie about fashion faux pas from nearly 2 decades ago, Meryl Streep is back as Miranda Priestly strutting through the office in red heels. And there's Anne Hathaway as Andy Sachs, now with sunglasses that say, "I'm too cool for this plot." Miranda looks at Andy and says, "Took you long enough." "Yes, Andy. Took you long enough to realize that working for a fictional magazine based on Vogue was your destiny, or maybe just your only option after realizing no one wears cerulean anymore. And can we talk about the soundtrack?" Madonna's Vogue plays in the background, a subtle nod to the fact that Runway is basically Vogue with more attitude and fewer actual articles. It's like they said, "Let's make sure everyone knows this film is about fashion by using a song that came out when shoulder pads were still socially acceptable." Returning alongside Streep and Hathaway are Emily Blunt and Stanley Tucci. Because if you're going to revisit a universe where people care about handbags as much as healthcare, you need the original crew. Anna Wintour herself joked she went to the premiere of the first film wearing Prada without knowing what it was about. Imagine that. Attending an event clueless about its content while wearing designer labels, it's almost like showing up at Coachella without knowing who Bad Bunny is but being decked out in flower crowns. So, mark your calendars for May 1st, 2026, the day we all collectively pretend our biggest problem is finding matching shoes for our existential crisis. Because if there's anything more first world than worrying whether Miranda Priestly will approve of your outfit choices, I haven't seen it yet.
The sweet scent of irony wafting through the Amazon rainforest, as Governor Gavin Newsom labels President Donald Trump an invasive species at COP30. In a world where facts are optional and logic is a quaint relic, we find ourselves in 2025 with Trump once again steering the ship of state away from climate action and straight into the arms of fossil fuels. Newsom, possibly eyeing his own run for the presidency in 2028, takes to Brazil not just to enjoy the local cuisine, but to remind everyone that America can still be relevant on climate issues, If only it weren't for that pesky wrecking ball in the White House. It's almost endearing how he believes words like footnote might sting a leader who calls climate change a, quote, con job. Meanwhile, Trump's administration continues its quest to redefine environmental stewardship by opening up California's coast for oil drilling. Because nothing says progress quite like more oil rigs glistening against Pacific sunsets. But fear not, Newsom assures us it's dead on arrival, though one can't help but wonder if it's the coastline or our collective sanity he's referring to. The White House fires back with its usual grace and decorum, dismissing Newsom's concerns as part of a so-called Green New scam, while conveniently ignoring their own contribution to deforestation via special purpose highways. After all, why let facts get in the way of a good narrative? In this theater of absurdity, China emerges as an unlikely victor by cornering clean energy markets, while we debate whether science is real or just another liberal conspiracy. Meanwhile, wildfires rage across Los Angeles in January because Mother Nature didn't get the memo about seasonal appropriateness. As Newsom attempts to translate climate jargon into everyday language, focusing on people and places rather than abstract concepts, one wonders if he's trying to reach voters or simply shouting into an abyss where reason goes to die. And thus unfolds our daily dose of dystopia, where leaders bicker over semantics while Rome burns, or rather, California. The future may be uncertain, but at least we'll have front row seats to watch it unravel in spectacular fashion.
Welcome to the Existential Crisis Hour, where we ponder the absurdity of life with a side of dry humor. Today, we're diving into an article from CNN titled Watch CNN's Live Coverage, which takes us on a journey through the bizarre tale of Jussie Smollett and the city of Chicago. Ah, Chicago, a city known for deep dish pizza, wind that could knock you over. And now, thanks to Mr. Smollett, a hate crime hoax that reads like a rejected script from a soap opera. 6 months in jail for lying to the police seems almost quaint in comparison to the cosmic joke that is human existence. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. There's irony to unpack here. Imagine being Chicago. You're already juggling crime rates and political tension like flaming bowling pins when suddenly Jussie Smollett decides to add his own twist, literally, to your narrative. It's as if he thought, how can I make this city's existential struggle even more perplexing? Oh yes, let's stage a hate crime. And thus began a whirlwind of media frenzy and public debate that left everyone asking, what is truth? And does it even matter? In this saga, Smollett's actions were less about personal gain and more about highlighting how easily reality can be manipulated. Like trying to convince yourself that kale chips are an acceptable substitute for potato chips. Spoiler alert, they're not. But what about Chicago itself? The city became an unwilling character in this drama, a backdrop against which questions about justice and morality played out like some avant-garde theater production nobody asked for, but everyone watched anyway. It was as if the universe decided Chicago needed another layer of complexity because dealing with regular crime just wasn't existential enough. As we ponder these events, with our characteristic blend of irony and bafflement, one can't help but wonder, is life just one big improv show where everyone forgot their lines? Perhaps it's all part of some cosmic sitcom where humanity is both protagonist and punchline. So next time you find yourself questioning the meaning behind life's absurd plot twists, or why you ever trusted kale chips, remember, it's all part of the grand spectacle called existence. And isn't it delightful in its sheer unpredictability?
The capitalist fever dream unfolds before us, a grotesque tableau of debt and desperation, masquerading as innovation. Inflation has tightened its grip on the American populace, squeezing every last drop of financial stability from their weary hands. The solution, it seems, is not to alleviate the burden, but to stretch it across lifetimes. Enter the 50-year mortgage proposal, an audacious gambit from the Trump administration promising salvation through perpetual indebtedness. A complete game changer, they proclaim with fervor. Yet beneath this veneer lies a sinister reality. A lifetime shackled to interest payments that could double those of traditional mortgages. This isn't homeownership. It's a mirage that dissolves long before the borrower reaches their twilight years. As if this weren't enough, the auto industry pitches 7-year car loans like candy at a carnival, enticing yet ultimately hollow. Cars depreciate faster than they can be paid off, leaving consumers trapped in upside-down loans where they owe more than their vehicle's worth. It's financial quicksand disguised as mobility. Meanwhile, buy now, pay later schemes seduce with promises of instant gratification. They lure consumers into purchasing beyond their means, only to ensnare them in cycles of late payments and mounting debt. The Federal Reserve's findings laid bare the truth. These schemes prey on those already teetering on the edge of financial ruin. All forms of consumer debt have ballooned to staggering heights, $18.6 trillion and climbing, a testament to our collective willingness to mortgage our futures for fleeting comfort today. Credit card debts soar alongside delinquency rates, painting a grim portrait of households stretched beyond breaking point. Student loans tell an even bleaker tale. Over 14% languish in serious delinquency as graduates navigate a job market that offers little reprieve from their academic shackles. Credit scores plummet in response, ushering borrowers into an abyss where financing becomes increasingly costly and elusive. Ownership, the cornerstone of the American dream, slips further out of reach with each passing day as property values skyrocket and mortgage rates remain unforgivingly high. Renting may offer temporary respite, but lacks the wealth-building potential inherent in ownership, a cruel irony in this fevered pursuit of prosperity. And so we march onward into this capitalist inferno where dreams are mortgaged for generations and consumption is king, a relentless cycle fueled by insatiable greed and societal collapse dressed up as progress.